up for the dinner afterwards. So there's going to be that sense of urgency expressed in the streets. And then I think people are going to take it one step further on Monday with Flood Wall Street. And also, as David said, you know, take it to the people who are really responsible for blocking progress and make those connections. You know, a lot of the people who are involved in organizing Flood Wall Street, I first met them in the context of Occupy Wall Street. And, you know, they understand that this is an economic system that is sacrificing people in the name of profit. They already knew that. What climate change tells us is this same logic of profit and growth above all else is sacrificing the very life systems that we all depend on. And that's an obvious connection to make. And it supercharges our movements with existential urgency. And, you know, this isn't about a brand new movement. It's about all of our movements coming together.
Naomi Klein, I want to thank you for being with us. We're doing part two of this interview, and then we'll be broadcasting it on Democracy Now! Naomi's new book is out, This Changes Everything, Capitalism Versus the Climate. Democracy Now! Will be covering the climate march on Sunday from 10:30 to 1:30 Eastern Time. Go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltzer, Monte, Naomi Shake, Steve Martinez, Sam Alcock, Honey Masood, Robbie Karen, Dina Gester, Amy Littlefield. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with guest host Lisa Loving. Today's guests are organizers of 15 Now PDX, a movement working towards a $15 minimum wage.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Cascade Media Convergence, Friday, September 19th through the 21st at the University of Oregon Turnbull Center, 70 Northwest Cooch Street in Portland. The goals of this Cascade Media Convergence are to create a space for media makers to network and share best practices, collectively learn skills, and lay the framework for continued collaboration and plant the seeds toward building a regional grassroots media coalition. There will be workshops, strategy sessions, and space and time for deeper discussions on all aspects of grassroots media. Again, that's the Cascade Media Convergence, September 19th through 21st at the University of Oregon Turnbull Center, 70 Northwest Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Soul music of the 60s and 70s will be presented in a series beginning in September on the 13th and 20th from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m., hosted by the legendary former KBOO radio host and journalist, Miss Lanita Duke. During the last quarter of the 20th century, Miss Duke hosted a weekly program from the grassroots. She pioneered protest music and commentary through a Black perspective lens. The program tendered both support and controversy, framing national discourse around identity and social change. The long-awaited return comes with classic soul music and jazz that showcase artists Billie Holiday, Curtis Mayfield, Gil Scott-Heron, and important artists of the era. So tune in for this special series, Saturdays, September 13th and 20th, from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m., The Motif.
Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor The Ghosts of Tonkin on Saturday, September 27th at 7:30 p.m. This award-winning play dramatizes the behind-the-scenes story of how public officials brought about one of the most devastating chapters in the history of the United States, the Vietnam War, and of Oregon Senator Wayne Morse, one of only two congressmen to vote against the Tonkin resolution. There will be a discussion following the play, moderated by KBOO's Joanne Hardesty, and includes playwright Steve Lyons and others. Again, that's The Ghosts of Tonkin, Saturday, September 27th at Lincoln Hall on the Portland State University campus, 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on The Ghosts of Tonkin can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. It's 8.04 a.m. and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. Sitting in for Joanne Hardesty, I'm your host, Lisa Loving. And today, the movement for a $15 minimum wage is gaining momentum around the nation and in Oregon, where activists are partnering with social service providers, advocacy groups, and state lawmakers in some cases to push for legislative action. We are live with Justin Kurtzen.
Yep.
Thanks for being here. And Jamie Partridge.
Hey.
Thanks for having us.
15 Now PDX on the campaign, how you can get involved, listeners, and we also want to hear your minimum wage story. So first up, I want to go to, I've never met Justin before, so I want to say, Justin, what's going on with 15 Now PDX? When did you come together, and what are you doing?
Oh, well, we came together back in February when... back during the Nick Caleb campaign, actually. He ran for city council, and he made the $15 an hour minimum wage a pretty substantial part of his campaign platform. It was one of the main issues that he was running on. And so a group of us got together and started holding weekly rallies in front of City Hall on Wednesdays during the city council meetings to help push the issue at city council. And 15 Now PDX sort of developed out of that. Lately, we've really been focusing a lot on building a broad coalition that can really come together and work towards getting a $15 minimum wage passed. So we've, over the last month or two, we've had endorsements from SEIU, Amalgamated Transit Workers, Musicians Union, a couple different Ask Me unions, and you know, sort of a long list of others.
Don't forget my union, the Letter Carriers.
Yes, Letter Carriers,
thank
absolutely.
You.
We like the Letter Carriers Union. And, you know, I'm curious, why, where are the pressure points for this issue politically? Like, so why City Hall? What can they do about it? I'm just asking rhetorically.
Well, we're inspired by what happened in Seattle, which is that the city council passed a minimum wage of $15 an hour. And that opened up space all over the country, in fact, for folks to look at municipalities. In San Francisco, the city council put a $15 minimum wage on the ballot for November, and all indications are that will pass. In Los Angeles, other places, folks are trying to raise the minimum wage on a city level. In Chicago, the mayor just initiated a $13 minimum wage to try to preempt the $15 minimum wage.
Yeah, they're doing something similar in LA as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think
it's like bargaining at the flea market
or something like it's that.
It's bargaining at the flea market.
Right.
Ask for twice as much as you want, but I don't think that that's what this. I don't think that's where this is coming from. It, you know, I don't think you can bargain for half as much as you want. So I don't. Which I'd really like to take a backhoe and dig into how much do people really need to make. You know, and you had mentioned. I've heard some officials. I heard a former city council member earlier this year say maybe $11 would work, but he thought 15 was too much. And I had a rage attack and said, you know, the NFL executive director makes $44 million. How come CEOs can make unlimited wealth? And that's only one person, but the majority of people can't even make enough to stop worrying about becoming homeless. So can we dig into, like, how do we come up to those statistics about what do people need? I mean, does anybody
sure.
want to jump in with that?
Yeah, I mean, this
not that it's necessarily completely science, but go ahead.
Sure. And it's one of the sort of common criticisms that we get when we start talking about 15 here in Portland and in Oregon is, oh, you know.
You want too much.
Well, yeah, you want too much.
You're
this
greedy,
is not Seattle.
Greedy.
It's not San Francisco.
It's getting there, though.
Right, it is. You know, or we don't have sales tax, so, you know, it can't be expensive to live in Oregon. But, the, you know, the fact is that that's not the case. I mean, for one, we have inflation rates in Oregon that are pretty rapidly outpacing the national rate, anywhere from doubling to tripling, depending on which sector of the economy you're looking at in particular. We're double or tripling the national rate of inflation over the last couple years. So prices are going up in Portland and all over Oregon at a rate that is more than the rest of the country. And then on top of that, we have studies coming out from groups like the National Low Income Housing Coalition, Alliance for a Just Society, that are saying that a living wage, which is defined variously as you know, maybe enough to pay your bills and save for emergencies in the case of Alliance for a Just Society. In the case of National Low Income Housing Coalition, they're talking about a single parent who's trying to provide housing for their child and themselves. But all of these different groups, regardless of what their metrics are, they're essentially saying that a living wage in the state of Oregon is at least $16 per hour. Yeah. So, you know, that really sort of sets in context the idea that 15 is really already kind of a compromise. It's really a conservative demand relative to what people actually need to survive and economically in the state of Oregon.
I was just going to say the Oregon Center for Public Policy. So yesterday, State Labor Commissioner Brad Avakian announced the slight bump up of the Oregon minimum wage because
15 cents.
Yeah, 15 cents. In 2003 or something like that, 2002, Oregon voters passed a law that ties the minimum wage to it indexes it to the cost of living index. It ties it to inflation, and so there's a little machine somewhere that makes calculations, and maybe once a year, maybe not. Sometimes it doesn't do it. But if the cost of living goes up a certain amount or more, the state, the Bureau of Labor and Industries bumps up the minimum wage. And it's always like 10 cents, 5 cents, 15 cents, right? So now, starting January 1st, it's going to be $9.25 an hour, right? And I was talking with you guys a little earlier before the show. I actually interviewed Brad Avakian yesterday afternoon. And he said he didn't think it was adequate either. And he said that he welcomed more people getting involved in a movement to push the legislature. He was pointing at the pressure point being the legislature, pushing the legislature to consider a higher minimum wage. And he didn't really throw out any numbers. I find that the elected officials are being, in Oregon, very conservative on this. Like I was saying before, the other guy that was like, $11 might be okay. Some of that stuff is really shocking. Listeners, by the way, this is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. We're talking about the fight for a real living wage. You know what? There's a minimum wage, and then there's a living wage. What is your story? How much are you paid? And how much is the least amount you've been paid? I'm curious about that, too, because there's a federal minimum wage for people who are servers in restaurants. And, like, I couldn't believe it when I saw that figure. It's like $2.50 an hour, $3.50 an hour, something like that. If you're a restaurant worker, that's the federal minimum wage. And I'm like, what the? That's like something out of a Charles Dickens novel, okay? So anyway, listeners, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We're talking about the minimum wage. What do you think about it? And I mean, again, I'm just curious. Okay, if CEO pay in America was a cheese and all the minimum wage workers, their pay was a cheese, which cheese would be bigger? You know what I'm saying? And yet, which of those cheeses is dragged around by the most number of people or created by the most number of people? I just don't understand why it's so difficult to get this through. I'm looking at you, activist people. Like,
I'll tell you, Lisa.
It's just a huge gulf between trying to explain this to people. It's weird. I don't get it.
Well, you don't have to explain it to people on the street. We've been out petitioning in neighborhoods, and it, you know, I was just at the Belmont Street Fair last weekend, and you know, I say, hey, sign a petition, $15 minimum wage, the rent's too damn high. And people turn around and say, yeah.
The rent's too damn high party would be a good one for us to have in the state.
I can't afford to live in Portland on the wages I make. And people understand that 15 is a living wage where you don't have to rely on food stamps or Section 8 or the Oregon Health Plan. That's what we're shooting for one person.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And the federal poverty line is pathetically low, and legislators will pull that out and say, well, we really only need 12 to bump a family up above the poverty line. But the poverty line is based on a 60s measure of what it costs for food and doesn't take into consideration the inflation in housing prices, the child care costs, the inflation in health care costs, and of course the soaring student debt that people end up with coming out of college or the credit card debt that most families are faced with. So when we're talking about a living wage, we're talking about much more than the federal poverty line.
I want to go to the Oregon Center for Public Policy, which is a think tank out of Silverton, Oregon, and they're very progressive people. They crunch numbers. And Janet Bauer, who, in my personal opinion, is a superstar economist in the state of Oregon, which, I mean, I guess it's a sort of a small pond, but she's an amazing professional there. She crunched the numbers for their analysis of what happened with the minimum wage hike yesterday, which actually everyone I talked to agrees that it's inadequate. But I did not call up any Republicans and ask them what they thought. Not that Republicans wouldn't support it, actually. But she's basically, she just really wants to stress the fact that when we're talking about a minimum wage, we're talking about the wage floor, we're talking about $9.25 an hour. That's she's basically saying, and I want to quote from her, "The official definition of poverty really measures serious economic privation, not basic needs. It's a floor. It's like it's not even meant to keep you off the street. It's not. No one's sitting around and going, huh, we really want everyone working full time to have a good life. Believe it or not, no one's saying that. I mean, I don't know. Seattle mayor is saying that. The mayor of Seattle, by the way, he walked a real tightrope to make that happen. And you got to give Kashama Sawant a lot of the credit there.
Absolutely.
That's the only way that could have happened in Seattle was they had neighborhood committees focused on raising the minimum wage and pushing the candidacy of Kashama Sawant, the socialist candidate for city council, who won, on the basis of pushing for a $15 minimum wage.
And listeners, we want to hear your story. 503-231-8187. Don't wait till the end of the show and call in the last 5 minutes. I know that's what you're thinking. Don't do that. Call now. We want to hear your story. What do you think about the minimum wage? And I'd really like to hear from some small business people, because I'm hearing a real difference of analysis about how this will hit small business people. And probably, you know, there will be trade-offs no matter what. But I actually think paying the poorest people more is going to put more money in the economy. And that's actually what a lot of people are saying. So we have John on the phone. John, what's going on with you?
Good morning. Thanks for doing the program. It's unfortunately near and dear to my heart. I'm a 55-year-old guy who had been a stay-at-home parent for an extended period of time. I find it very hard to get work that pays decently. As Gandhi said, poverty is the greatest form of violence. You know, looking at our country, sometimes the thing that I really wish that one could do is to take the people who have so much money and make them live a year on poverty wages, just so that they could physically understand both the stresses and the reality that one encounters when you do that. Mm-hmm. Because it's an unending source of stress to be constantly aware that you don't have enough money to actually do what you need to be able to do. That's my comment, and I'll listen to you, and thank you so much for
Thanks for calling, John. Thanks for calling, and the number to call is 503-231-8187. We are live in the studio with the $15 minimum wage, 15 now PDX. And those are the words I want you to remember. Find out more about them. That is their website, 15nowpdx.org. They're on social media as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting what John said, because we have in this country, we're always at war with ourselves, right? We had the war on drugs, the war on poverty. How'd that work out? And now it's like, this is sort of a new generation. I'm looking at you, Jamie. I think maybe you're retired.
I am.
You are a direct line to what I consider to be kind of more like the legitimate, like, civil rights movements of the, you know, of a generation or two ago.
I'm a child of the 60s. Yeah.
I could have just
said
that.
I was, you know, an impoverished 20-something for a number of years. So I've lived through that minimum wage, you know, 10, 15 years of minimum wage before I got on at the post office, but where you can always get a good job. But the great promise of our movement is that there are many, many people who are working on minimum wage, and the number is increasing. And so when you're out there on the street looking for folks that are interested and concerned, there are, 100,000 workers in Oregon that'll be impacted by an increase in the minimum wage?
At least,
it's like 8% of all the workers. Mm-hmm. 8% of all the workers
and,
in the
And the low-wage, I mean, it's increasing rapidly. All the low-wage jobs accounted for 76% of net job growth in 2010. I mean, you know, then your jobs are low wage.
Well, and I think, you know, John's situation sort of related to statistics like that, you know, I mean, it brings up a good point about who is going to benefit from raising the minimum wage. You know, there's always been this sort of false conception that people who are low wage workers are teenagers, you know, that just want extra cash to, you know, to buy candy and McDonald's after school or whatever.
But the numbers show it's women and it's moms.
Yeah, I mean, more than half of them are women. Over 25% of these people have children. And almost, you know, if you start talking about raising the minimum wage to 15 instead of something like 10 or 11, over 40% of the people who would benefit from a raise to a $15 an hour minimum wage are over the age of 40. So, you know, we're not talking about young kids.
Like John,
like John. And, you know, oftentimes people who are retired from their careers but still need work, you know, in order to meet their basic necessities and are going out and getting jobs at places like fast food restaurants or Walmarts and getting paid these ridiculously low wages. And, you know, these are respected members of our society who have paid their dues, and they're, you know, they're sort of being treated rather poorly, in my opinion, by relegating them to these low-wage jobs.
By the way, can I also mention that Facebook opened up a big call center or something like that in Eastern Oregon? How much are those people paid? How many tax breaks do we give to these Walmart companies and stuff like that to open up their outlets here, but then we can't even squeeze the resources out of them to make our state flourish? You know, Oregon really is the Arkansas of the West Coast, as so many people have said. Let's go to the phone lines. We have Heidi on the phone. Heidi, what's going on with you today?
Hey, Jamie. Hi, it's Heidi from the ISO. Justin,
hey, Heidi.
I was the one that spoke at the rally. Hey, I had to call because one of the things, and I mentioned this at a rally that I spoke at, is when you get an increase in your wages, and I'll just preface it by saying my daughter's now graduated from high school, but I was a single parent for 18 years, and I lived on low income. And I'm making $14 an hour now, and I look back and I'm like, how the hell did I even, I think, oh, it must have been my magic. I have no idea
welfare
how
cheese.
I did that.
It was, it was welfare cheese. Do you remember welfare cheese?
Because
I remember welfare cheese.
Sure. Oh,
cheese keeps coming up for me in this discussion. Keep going, Heidi.
So the thing is, first of all, the thing that strikes my mind when they tell us just to, you know, just take whatever you can get. Like, why is somebody like me and other people in my position who are raising the next generation and working hard to do it, told to accept crumbs? But these CEOs who sit on their butts and just take money in and don't do anything except move money around and hide in an offshore account, they're supposed to take what, you know, get everything. And I'm supposed to accept crumbs. The thing is, and the reason why I called, and then I want to put on the table because I think it's important. From my perspective, the thing that happens when you do get more, and I'm only at $14 an hour now, which seems like I'm rolling in the dough now compared to where I was, right? I'm now told that I have to reapply for the Oregon Health Plan. I think I'm making too much now because I looked at the amount I'm supposed to make. And now I'm told that if I don't get that, I have to now get insurance at work, which is going to cost me $350 copay, which now puts me more behind than when I got the increase in my wages. This constant backpedal, and then the being told by numerous people, the media, all the right-wing think tanks, that I'm not, you know, just work a little harder. Pull yourself up a little harder. Obama mimics that crap all the time. And in someone in my position who's worked hard, who's raised a human being to stand on her own two feet and is working very hard, that's a big slap in the face, which goes back to the previous caller's point about the emotional toll that it takes. And we don't want to put that on our kids, so we just carry it, we carry it. And then we're told, oh, just keep taking crumbs. Just work a little harder. And I just think it's important to put that out there. Like, even when we get more, we're still put back and we're still told it's not good enough. So that does take an emotional toll on
people. You know what's interesting, Heidi? I mean, now that you phrased it that way, I'm really old and I've grown old, like analyzing American society. And one of the stupid things that we do in the United States is that we judge people by what people are what they do, right? And mm-hmm. so we have a number of people, I'm just going to say on the city level here, the city of Portland is going to hire like a mental health expert to advise the police department to do something. That person's going to be paid $250,000, okay? The superintendent of Portland Public Schools, she just got a raise. She's making almost $250,000, right? But people such as yourself, and I didn't ask you what you do for a living, if you're paid not very much, the power structure says that's because you're not worth it. And it doesn't even matter what you do. It doesn't matter even if you are, you know, it doesn't matter what you do. It's like you are what you're paid. And there's something about that system. And Jamie talked about, you know, when you go down the street and you ask people about the minimum wage, I think that people have that deep sense that we're not really valued the same as the guy that runs the National Football League. $44 million, I mean, I got to put my head between my knees for a minute. But that's the thing that gets me. It's like the people at the top, they can get paid, and no one really cares. You know what I'm saying? That's an exaggeration. But then it's like the people who actually have to take the broom, take the dustpan, and rub it along the floor, you know, oh, God, well, that's just not valued.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so, I mean, I don't want to take up too much time if there's other callers, but I do work for a small business. And what I've been hearing, and after I actually did the rally with Jamie and Justin, I kind of shared the talk or the little speech that I gave. And one of the things that was on the people's minds at my work was like, well, they're going to raise what it costs for us to buy stuff if we give raises to people. I was like, oh, my God.
They're already doing that. Newsflash, it's already happening. Okay.
I had to flip that around. But I do think, and Jamie actually, I think, can talk to this really well because we talk about the value of labor. So basically what that's telling us is that the CEO's value of his labor is valued above and beyond what I do. And we have to flip that around. So even if you don't want to call yourself a socialist, the thing is that the very corrupt capitalist system controls the dialogue from the very top to the workspace that I'm in. And I have to flip that narrative around. And I just wanted to kind of end on that note. And I know both these guys can speak brilliantly to that. And I think that we need to talk about that, too, because that's really at the crux of why people are mentally thinking in those terms when they shouldn't even, like, when they're going on the street, you know what people are thinking. But they still mimic what they hear in the media. And I'll end on that so I don't take up too much more time. But thank you so much for this. Okay, bye.
Thanks for calling. Heidi, the other thing, Heidi just mentioned the capitalist system. The capitalist system calls the shots. We don't really have a capitalist system in the United States. We've got like a government welfare system. We bail out government institutions and gigantic corporations all the time. It's only when it comes to the people at the bottom of the system that no one wants to put any money to that. You know, actually, I'm sticking my neck out, but I think that the communist Chinese people, they're actually way better capitalists than we are. And they've been doing it for way longer. And it doesn't matter, you know, what term you put on that. Anyway, this is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. Sitting in for Joanne Hardesty, I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live in the studio with Justin Kurtzen and Jamie Partridge of 15 Now PDX on their campaign, how you can get involved. We're taking your calls on your minimum wage story. And the number's 503-231-8187. We have Bethany on the line. Bethany, what's going on?
Well, you know, I think we're fighting really hard for this minimum wage to be raised, but I don't know where it's going. That's my problem, is I'm not seeing any effect from it. Yeah, we might have gone up 15 cents, but people are still struggling. I mean, I people can't pay their bills, so their debt goes higher and higher, their credit goes lower and lower. Pretty soon, before you know it, you can't afford anything because you don't have good enough credit. I just don't think that's... I don't know where it's going to change. I mean, if we're fighting this hard and our voice isn't being heard, and I don't know where it's actually going to make a difference. You know what I mean?
You sort of feel frustrated because you don't see it where it's going. You don't go see it going anywhere. I hear you. So I think our cool pals are going to speak to that right now.
Yeah, I think that concern sort of relates to what you were saying about Brad Avakian and his sort of outlook that you know, the state legislature is sort of the linchpin and you know, where we're going to get this work done.
Yeah, he's a state official, so he would.
Right, and you know, we're certainly willing to work with legislators and do what we can to get something done at the state level.
But in fact, we have Senator Chip Shields that's going to introduce a $15 minimum wage bill in the state legislature.
What?
Right. Yeah, yeah. That we just found out about that kind of recently.
But don't you think that's a little too late?
Well,
I mean, people are already in debt. People are already in debt.
Sure.
People are already struggling because they spent so many years getting minimum wage and not being able to pay. They can barely pay the minimums, like the electric bill. Oh my God! You know,
Bethany. So here's the thing, though. I mean, Bethany's like, so I mean, strategically, you do, you want to start at some point, though. I mean, at some point, you have to try to find a target and try to hit that target. I mean, yeah, there's definitely people already living on the street. It's awful. I don't know what to do with that as a social justice movement.
The average credit card debt is $5,000, right. And the average student debt is $25,000.
Yeah. But I guess, Bethany, I guess what I'm saying is you got to start somewhere. But, I mean, I hear you completely.
Well, I think that, you know, both Bethany and what Heidi was saying sort of get at the same idea that, you know, raising the minimum wage is great and it's, you know, long, long, long overdue.
It's a start.
Right. But it is. I mean, it's just a start. And in a lot of ways, you know, it, sort of the whole 15 thing is a movement by itself. But in a lot of ways, it's also just a tactic to build a much broader movement because, you know, we do need to raise the minimum wage. That will help people. But we also need to be talking about maximum wages for these CEOs.
And forgiving the debt.
Yeah, debt forgiveness. Right. Helping homeless people. We need to be talking about, you know, universal health care so that our, you know, we're not putting out all this money from our paychecks towards ridiculously overinflated health care costs. I mean, there's so many things that we need to be doing to be helping and relieving the burden of working class people, and raising the minimum wage is only a small part of that, but we very much see it as a way, and again, this gets back to the whole Bradavakian and the legislator being the linchpin, that we really see the working people of Oregon and the United States as being the linchpin. Like, we can work with legislators all we want, but they're only going to go so high if they don't feel the pressure of the working class people at their feet.
How do we get them to feel that pressure? Because people that have a place to live, and it might be small, because most places here in Portland are really small, you know, right. And they pay a lot of money for this, and they're on the verge of being homeless. The homeless is increasing because we're one step away.
Always.
Right. And I think it's just a matter of people getting involved and lots of people getting involved. I mean, all of these state legislators, they need to be hearing from their constituents. You know, they need to hear your story. You should be calling them and writing them letters, you know, encouraging your friends and neighbors to do the same thing. Okay. You know, start, if you've got the time, start a 15 Now chapter.
in your neighborhood.
Anything that we can do to get as many people involved and out in the streets as possible is going. I mean, that's really how Seattle won. The city council did not just randomly decide, oh, people are poor and we need to raise the minimum wage to help them.
There
was
many,
a grassroots
pickets
movement.
Pickets around City Hall.
Yeah,
they,
I mean, fast food workers were going on strike. I mean,
they elected
a
socialist to the city council. Right. I think was part of that. Bethany, I want to ask, what's your story? I mean, what have you been stuck in a minimum wage job? Tell us about yourself.
Oh my goodness. So I started in sales. I'm from Boston, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And Boston is just as worse, you know, and I moved up to Portland thinking this is going to be my new opportunity. Continued in sales, and I cannot get ahead to save my soul. I cannot do it because every check goes directly to a bill. Every check in the electric gets higher, and the water gets higher. And every bill I get, so other bills have to not be paid. My student loan can't be paid. I'm in diversion of the student loan, so I pay whatever I can. And the second that you get a little bit more, like Heidi was saying, you feel like you're rolling in the money, but you have nothing to get yourself out because you got more bills.
Mm-hmm. And then you break your leg, and then it all goes to heck.
Oh, yeah. One time of being sick and missing one day, it throws you into a snowball effect, and you're like on the verge of being homeless. They have things that help you with, like, electricity, but nobody has the money for that.
Mm.
Nobody.
Bethany?
I mean, the one time I asked for help with electricity, nobody could help. Nobody. And I don't have family out here. I don't have friends out here to be able to say, hey, can I borrow something? You know, and borrowing, number two, is pride demeaning. You just got to tear yourself apart when you're asking somebody else for money. Mm-hmm. It's the root of violence right there.
Yeah.
It can start anything, you know, and it makes it harder, you know, and trying to survive is twice as worse. You know, you understand homelessness when you understand how close you are to it.
Right, right. Bethany, God, it's been a joy to hear from you. I know that the story's heavy, but it's really a pleasure to hear from you, and I hope you call again. And let's spend the whole rest of this segment talking about, like, what Bethany should do, and all the Bethanys and all of us should do, actually. Well, you guys sort of crashed a like a town hall meeting. Did you crash it earlier this week?
We participated, yeah.
Right on. By the way, the number to call, 503-231-8187. Now, there was a regularly scheduled town hall meeting in, was it in Northeast Portland or North
Southeast?
Southeast Portland, by the state legislators who represent there. And you guys just went and you just told them what you thought.
Yeah, we packed the meeting, people holding 15 now signs and wearing 15 now buttons, and putting forward questions about raising the minimum wage. And the legislators who called a town hall meeting were included the majority leader of the Senate, Dianne Rosenbaum, and the Speaker of the House, Tina Kotek. So these are like, you know,
the big players.
The big players, right? And this is where, you know, when these kinds of meetings get scheduled, we need the Bethanys of the world to be there.
You know, and the other thing is, as we just mentioned in Seattle, Seattle is the first place, I think, that really blazed the trail on the $15 minimum wage piece. But again, that whole movement really did end up wrapping around a candidate that was elected to the city council, a socialist candidate. I mean, that rocked the whole world. It did rock the whole world. Let's go back to the phone lines. Do we have another caller? Mark is on the line. Mark, what are you thinking about this morning?
Well, it's sort of like a reality check on, like, basic economics. That it seems to me that as soon as you raise the minimum wage, it's going to raise the rent. It's going to raise the cost of food.
Mark, it's already happening. That's already happening in the absence of anything else. So come up with another one.
So you're saying that they wouldn't relate to each other to the point where people
Clearly they don't. No offense. I mean, people are already not paid enough, and already the cost of everything's going up. So as a society, when do we stop and go, no, we're reordering this. We're sick of the government giving corporate welfare to all these other people, but not serving real people.
Yeah.
No, really, Mark. I mean, I got to take my foot and stomp.
I agree with that.
Although I totally appreciate you asking the hard question. That is the hard question.
Here's the thing I'm thinking is, of course, Portland is the greatest place to retire.
Oh, God, no.
Especially if you're in your 30s, of course, the old joke. But what I'm trying to explain is for people that don't have minimum wage or a raise in their minimum wage and that aren't working, that are actually on a fixed income, like retired, if everything else goes up, it becomes even less livable for that whole community.
And Mark, it's already happening.
And so it disenfranchises some
Yeah, I mean,
at the cost of what, you know?
Sure, and I mean, this is one of, it's a common question that we get when we're talking to people about raising the minimum wage. So, you know, it's definitely something that we have to deal with and know how to talk about. So, I mean, there's a few ways to sort of approach the question. And, you know, one of them, like Lisa already said, is that, inflation is already happening despite, you know, years of a lack of growth in the minimum wage and in lower wages. You know, things like automation. I mean, the whole entire Industrial Revolution is based on the idea of automation. I mean, these are things that have been happening since well before there was a minimum wage, and they're still happening now, and they're going to continue to happen even if we don't raise the minimum wage. And, you know, I mean, if you look at graphs of the real minimum wage and the way it goes up and down and superimpose that on top of a graph of inflation over the 20th century, it becomes pretty clear that there's no direct correlation between the two. You get times when the value of the minimum wage is going up, but prices are stagnant. And you also get times where the value of the minimum wage is going down, but for some reason, prices are also rising at the same time.
Our
there's still inflation.
Our economy is cooked. So when do we grab the frying pan and start cooking it ourselves?
Yeah. Well, and what all of it really gets down to, because it's true, you know, employers, they will try to pass off the costs of wage raises onto consumers if they can. They will try and automate portions of their shop if they can. You know, we've seen it over and over and over again, regardless of whether it's in response to wage increases or not. We know that they're going to do these things. And ultimately, what we have to do is not just stifle wages as a response, and, oh, well, we can't raise wages, we can't do this, we can't do that.
Because we've been doing that.
because they might respond in a way that we don't like. What we need to do is build a movement that can prevent them from taking our jobs through automation. And we need to build a movement that's strong enough to say, no, you're going to give us better wages, and you're going to take it out of your own cut rather than passing the cost back onto us. And that's something that is building, but that doesn't exist right now. And we need to keep building that grassroots working class movement so that we can take really hard hard stands that say, no, we're going to do this and we're going to do it right. And you're not going to pass the cost back on to us. You're not going to take our jobs as a result.
The other piece of that is that not everybody agrees that that's how capitalism works. And I'm going to go back again to Brad Avakian, the State Bureau of Labor and Industries director. His argument, now he testified in front of a Senate subcommittee last year that was looking at raising the federal minimum wage. And he was looking at a panel full of people that were kind of basically believing what Mark just said. I'm not even saying that Mark necessarily believes that. It's important people ask that question. It has to be asked. The hard questions have to be asked. But Brad Avakian's analysis, and that's our state labor commissioner, is that when we raise the minimum wage, it actually gives more money for workers to spend when the prices go up, right? He's saying, why can't we just basically tweak the system so that the people at the bottom have more of the money, so that when whatever it is happens, they can spend that money? And he's also saying, Brad Avakian is saying, that when the state of Oregon first indexed the minimum wage to the cost of living in 2003, the number of small businesses was about 79,000 small businesses. Today, it's almost 90,000 small businesses. So raising the minimum wage, even hiking it up incrementally, whatever, it's obviously not killing small businesses. If you did shove in that higher wage, there's definitely going to be an adjustment. In Seattle, by the way, most people have not read the details of their minimum wage plan. Theirs is a very complicated system. It's a somewhat complicated system. It phases in the wage over a period of years. Small businesses of a certain size are not impacted by it. There's certain places where they're making it so that there's exemptions to the law. People can actually ask for an exemption to the law. So it's not like a great big jackbooted thug hits you on the back of the neck and says, you will be paid more, which would, you know, I kind of am interested in that. But I mean, I'm just saying I consistently am hearing people, even progressive people, trot out that capitalism theory of if it costs more, it's going to cost more. And frankly, our system doesn't really work like that. And I don't know when it's ever worked like that, honestly. You know, if it really were capitalism, then we would be living in the jungle, because to be honest with you, capitalism is not legal pot. It's people selling drugs on the corner. That's pure capitalism. I don't mean to be a weirdo about it. This is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. It is 8:40 on Thursday morning. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, sitting in for Joanne Hardesty. We're here with super cool Justin Kurtzen and Jamie Partridge of the 15 Now PDX. I love this discussion. I think it's fascinating because we don't really even always understand how our government and community structures work. And here's one where we're testing the money plumbing, right? We're debating the money plumbing, and I think that we can make it work better than it does. We've got a full slate of callers. Let's go to the phone lines. Naya, wow, what's going on with you?
Hey, not too much. I've been joking for years, half joking, that wages don't need to go up. Everything else just needs to stop going up.
So, I hear you.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. I know it's it might be just a Band-Aid, but how can I, as the consumer, fight back with my buying dollar by not spending it on something that costs a huge amount? I don't want that to exploit someone in Guatemala or somebody in the sugarcane fields or the banana plantations. But I think we need a change in thinking all across the board. Yeah. I think human beings just need to stop grabbing for that extra whatever it is at the, you know, the upper middle and the upper, upper crusty people need to, I don't know how. How do you say, hey, don't you have enough cars and houses and golf courses with your name on them? I mean, how do you do it?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about
you
paradigm
just do
shift.
What you just said, but you know what I'm saying? You do what you just said. You just spend your money strategically where you want it to be. It is your personal investment in the planet, so just exactly what you said. You know what's interesting about that, Naya, what you just brought up, too, is, again, I just quoted the numbers from the State Bureau of Labor and Industry, how many small businesses there are in the state. There's so few jobs in Oregon that it's often, you see it popping up on Forbes Incorporated's list of the 10 top states for entrepreneurship, because nobody can get a job, so you got to do something. And so part of it is, you know, part of this equation, I think you're right, is that we're looking at how much of our economy is run by small businesses and government. And so how do we want to support them too. So we want to make sure that, I mean, me and the mouse in my pocket, I really honor small business. I know so many small business people and they suffer, you know. But anyway, Naya, we're going to keep thinking about that. And we're going to go back to the phone lines and get some other callers, but I'm flagging that that issue of how do you, do we need to raise the wages or do we need to make everything cost less? Actually, you know, which is the easiest thing? My auntie in Oklahoma wanted a sunken living room, and my wonderful uncle, who I adore, he couldn't figure out how to build a house like that. So he jacked the house up and left the living room where it was. And so that's how she got the sunken living room. And that's kind of what Naya's asking about. So anyway, let's go back to the phone lines. We've got Barbara on the phone. Barbara, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I want to call in and say hi to Jamie and Justin and throw in my two cents. I think I have three suggestions. One is that we start at the top where the money never trickled down and amend the Constitution to get money out of politics and That's let good. Those job creators know that labor creates wealth. And we need to get people back and involved in politics to at very least, you know, vote, get the vote. And other than that, I want to say that we need to get lobbying out of D.C. It's a $9 billion industry, and we need to get the money out, basically. And that's one way we'll get some back in our pockets.
All right.
And I just want to say thank you to Jamie and Justin and the people that are doing the work out there. I can't get out every day. I've been on disability since 1997, and we don't even get our 3% increase every year. So I just wanted to say thank you for doing what you do, for educating and informing and lobbying for us on a local level.
All right. Thanks for calling,
thank
Barbara.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
You know, what she said reminded me of something that I heard. I interviewed a whole bunch of people yesterday on this subject, and a few of them, the Oregon Center for Public Policy people, they're pointing out that bad wage floor, keeping people at poverty wages is bad for the overall economy. And, you know, to take the concerns that Mark had about, well, if we raise the minimum wage, won't everything cost more? I just wonder if we pay people more, will the economy actually have more circulation? Will those small businesses have a higher profit? I mean, I'm just wondering. It's like...
I'd like to speak to that.
Thank you.
Clearly, when you pay people better, they're less likely to leave. You have a lower turnover, and so therefore you have lower training costs. So small businesses benefit in that way. And as you mentioned, poor people, when they have more money in their pocket, they spend it. Mm-hmm. Rich people, they send it to their Swiss bank account.
Right, exactly.
Right. And so when you have more money in circulation, you have businesses prosper. And in all 13 states who raised the minimum wage this year, there's a lower unemployment rate than there is in other states. So what that tells you is that people are getting hired. The businesses are prospering where the minimum wage is being raised. During the Truman era, the minimum wage was doubled and the unemployment rate was 3 to 5%.
You're literally putting more money in circulation in a local community.
Yeah.
Just right. That simple.
Well, and I think it's this gets to sort of the debate between a lower minimum wage raise and a higher minimum wage raise and how they're going to affect small businesses. And I think that there's a sort of a good argument potentially to make that, you know, when we're messing around with these little 10, 15 cent raises, that ultimately that maybe does hurt small businesses. They've got this increased labor cost, but the people that they're paying are not making enough extra money that it's actually bettering their economic situation. They don't really have enough extra money to really go out and spend it. It's just pennies, really. Right. But the more cumulative cost for the small business that's paying all these employees is bigger. Whereas, you know, so if you're going just up a few cents or maybe even to $10 or $11, then there could be a negative effect on our smaller businesses that run on a thinner margin. But when you talk about a substantial raise in the minimum wage, like 15, then all of a sudden you're putting enough money in low wage workers' hands that starts to become offset.
Or they can send their kid to college.
Right. Or they can afford to not shop at Walmart or Target, and they can actually start patronizing these small businesses where prices are already a little bit higher because of all of the, you know, scales of economy.
Well, and the question of prices, you know, is not directly related to wages. I mean,
no,
wages are
not.
Only a small portion of what goes into a price.
A very small portion.
And this question of poor people losing benefits when their wages go up, you know, losing food stamps, losing Section 8, losing Oregon Health Plan. If your wages only go up a little bit and you go above the federal poverty line, you lose your food stamps, you're sunk. But if your wages go up by 50%, yeah, you'll lose your food stamps, but you'll have that much more money in your pocket. Mm-hmm. In fact, you'll have more,
yeah,
a lot
more. Yeah,
you
make up your food stamps and you've got extra on top
right.
of that.
So that argues for not a $12 minimum wage, right. but a $15 minimum wage.
Mm-hmm. And again, in Seattle, they didn't just take a gavel and smack it on a ground on the table and say $15 for everybody. I think that they created a special wage for teenagers. They went in there and nuanced it, right? So that they tried to bring everyone to the table and figure out how to find that balance. I can't speak to all the states, and I want to say one more thing. The minimum wage that's going up 15 cents in 2015, that's going to give the average worker who works a 30-hour work week $234 more to spend on goods next year. But that still goes back to what Justin said. I mean, that's not actually enough money to go have a weekend at the coast.
It's less than a dollar a day.
You could get you can't buy a new bike for that either.
Nope.
Anyway, this is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. I'm your host, sitting in for Joanne Hardesty. I'm Lisa Loving. You know she's going to be back the first week in October, so stay tuned for her to come back. We are live in the studio talking about the $15 minimum wage campaign of 15 Now PDX. We're with Justin Kurtzen and Jamie Partridge. Let's go back to the phone lines. Ken, we've got Ken on the phone. What's going on, Ken?
Not a lot. Thank you for listening to my call. I appreciate it. I am a custodian at the local community college, and I make roughly $13.25 an hour. And I'm in my late 40s. I started in the workforce working with my father when I was about 5 years old. And I have been in lower-paying jobs my whole entire life. I would say mostly by choice because I was a touring musician. And nobody in the workforce really wants to hire a touring musician because, well, when are you going to be at my office to work? You know? So it comes down to this. We either, A, united we stand as a nation, tell the government to stop wasting our money, and we regain control of our government, or B, we just do away with money.
I like both of those ideas.
So take your pick, because we are the richest nation in the world, but unfortunately, we are also becoming the dumbest. And if you want to keep your society dumb, you don't pay them so that they can't go to school, so that when they get sick, they lose their job.
Right. Well, you know, and I think...
Thanks for calling, Ken.
Ken makes a really good point about where our money goes and how our government is spending our money.
I wonder about that all the time. You look around the city, you go, where's the money? Because I can see where it's not. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, and just to sort of take that idea and bring it back to small businesses and you know, this idea about exemptions for really small businesses that maybe actually can't afford 15 or phase-ins. And really, you know, instead of talking about exemptions for small businesses or even phase-ins for small businesses, we really should be talking about, you know, what we already spend in terms of taxes and where that money goes, and really think about building a movement that can take away all of these subsidies for these massive energy corporations and defense corporations and Nike and Intel, and start putting that money into our small businesses. You know, we could flip our subsidy system on its head and end the subsidies for these massive multinationals and actually start subsidizing our small businesses so that they can afford to pay their employees a living wage. But unfortunately, that's not on a lot of people's – well, it is on a lot of people's minds, but it's not something that's, you know, where is everybody? Nobody's in the streets about it.
Yeah. We have seen people in the streets about it, and I will say that, speaking as a media professional, that the number of reporters on the ground has shrunk by some people estimate 1/3. Nationally, we've seen it in our local community as well. There's so many stories that don't get covered or are not going to get covered, mm-hmm. starting whenever, okay? And you thought that the daily newspaper was bad before, you better strap on your protective headgear, because it's only going to – we just lack the resources. As a society, we've sort of have allowed things to roll out and just said, oh, that's the economy, such as the, say, for example, the Advanced Publications, the two billionaire brothers that own the Oregonian, they don't live here. They don't care about this town. They don't live in New Orleans. They don't care about that town or Cleveland or any of the others. They're billionaires, and they're saying that the daily newspapers aren't making enough money, so they have to completely pull out all their teeth and get rid of a lot of those reporters, and it's all about money. It goes back to that issue. Let's go back to the phone lines. I'm sure there's a bunch more people with amazing stories there. Malia?
Hi.
What's going on?
Hey, I think Ken had some very important issues that kind of relate to what I had to say. And I can't remember the exact change, but I know less than 2 weeks ago I read an article in the Oregonian stating that the average woman with one or two children just to make ends meet in this world today needs to be making $30.11 an hour. And that was actually in the Oregonian, and I thought, that sounds right. I honestly think that things that make it difficult for people with minimum wage are the education, the medical, the things that really involve basic needs in our society with people making under a certain amount per year need to be met. Otherwise, out of that income that they make, because the income that they make really is not enough to mirror the basic needs in life. And without the basic needs in life being met, people become darker. And we're starting to see this in many different ways where people have turned to dire behaviors or predators on other people. I mean, here in Oregon alone, you know, that you read stories all the time about people financially taking advantage of other people. But I really think there needs to be a balance, and I am so against a corporation. I know that growing up here that the average business in Oregon, like the backbone of the economy, was the small businesses, and now these things are struggling to survive. And to bring so much corporate,
welfare
stores, yes, make the people dependent on that, and all they are is marionettes in corporate. Most corporations do not care about the individual. They care about making as much money as they can.
Now that's capitalism.
And unless there's a relationship, like capitalism has gone across the line into the dark side, where unless we can find a more balanced relationship between lifestyle and money with people, that things are just going to get worse. They really are.
Thanks a lot, Malia. I'm gonna cut you loose because we have a couple callers. You're sort of echoing some things that Naya said about, like, what about the cost of things and what about people's eagerness to buy things that maybe they can't afford. And I have to say, Malia, I actually think that really the system never was made to work for all people. And like, the history of the United States is the history of people tinkering with the system to try to make it work for them. And who's got access? Who's got the screwdrivers that fit those sockets? Right. But, you know, I think actually, Malia, I think kind of what I really hear you saying is it reminds me of that film, It's a Wonderful Life, the Frank Capra film. And, we're turning into a big Potterville. Right. It's like and it's true. I think that people always were yucky and violent and icky because we're humans. Right. We're animals. But I think that there is something about the meltdown economy that's bringing out the worst in us. And let's try to get those last callers in before the end of the show. Susan's on the line. Susan, what's going on?
Oh, hi, this is Susan. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say, first of all, I am in favor of the $15 minimum wage, but I also would say that there are some industries that the wages comprise a greater percent of the cost to the consumer buying whatever goods that may be or services. And those may be more impacted, and I understand also around the small businesses. So I would agree with also what I heard the gentleman saying in terms of using the government subsidies. I think that is what we're really talking about, is the redistribution
of wealth
in a way that the difference between the lowest paid and the highest paid. So although I would also be in favor of a maximum wage compensation.
That's what Justin's talking about. Susan, I have to wrap you up because we've got like a minute and a half. We're going to have to cut off the last caller. I don't think we're going to be able to get to that caller. We need to wrap up the show because we need to let people know how they can get with you guys. Let's go there right now. You guys, so Justin, Jamie, what are you doing now and how can people hook up with you and support your work?
Well, the easiest way to hook up with us would be to go to 15nowpdx.org. That's our website. We've got a calendar there that lists out the different events that we have going. Jamie's been working really hard on some upcoming events. I'll let him tell people about those.
Oh, we're wrapping it up. No, we're not going to have the time to do that. And I do have to say, I'm on there. Portland Zoo Workers Demand a Fair Contract. That's fascinating. That's it for our show, people. Thanks to our guests, 15nowpdx. More on their work at 15nowpdx.org. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Kush, the studio dog. This show will be podcast on kboo.fm by the end of today. Grab that link and send it to your lawmakers. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for Teresa Mitchell and Press Watch.
I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that Peter is gold. After story had never been.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Oregon Tradeswoman presentation, My Walk Has Never Been Average, on Friday, September 26th at 7 p.m. My Walk Has Never Been Average is a multimedia presentation based on the lives of women whose stories are rarely told. Adapted for the stage from interviews with Black women in all aspects of construction, these stories reveal great inner strength and accomplishment. That's My Walk Has Never Been Average on Friday, September 26th. 7 p.m. at the Alberta Rose Theater, 3000 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland, Oregon. For more information, that can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. Good morning, it's 9:01, and here's what's coming up on KBOO this morning. First, it's Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know, with Teresa Mitchell. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Per Fogering speaks with journalist Robert Perry about Ukraine. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, a report on the cross-country train headed for the Global People's Climate Rally in New York this weekend. Activist Harvey Wasser.